This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
How dare you, Sean?
I apologize.
What are you doing to me?
I don't know what happened there.
He thought it was 3 o'clock.
I was thinking it was 3 o'clock. Not to say that I don't enjoy spending my 2 hours here with you.
I should have sprinted to my car before he figured out the mistake, and then I could have blamed Sean for 2 hours of dead air today.
There you go.
Man. My version of crosstalk.
Man. Yeah. That's hot talk is what it is there. Okay. Welcome to our Fastest 15. It is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. And you just heard Ursula mention the updated details on this horrible Aurora Avenue crash. And I got a devastating email because I know some relatives of the victims of this crash, and they are just absolutely lovely people, and that's all I'm going to say about it because they want to grieve in private. But it is just so heartbreaking. And if you heard our show yesterday, you know, people were infuriated. I like talking to people that I disagree with, but I had on this guy from The Stranger who said the 23-year-old meth-addled driver has no blame for this crash, that it's our car culture that is to blame. And I'm thinking, you know, even though I like talking to people who have points of view that I, you know, not only disagree with but can't fathom, but I was thinking, man, if the family heard that.
Oh, it's such an extreme position to take to make a point of people need to get out of their cars.
But you don't use someone who has lost so much. There are some lovely, wonderful people who are just absolutely grieving. And as we get some of the details of this Radelyn King, 23 years old, and we're getting more from the filing papers and the court records now, that she just closed her eyes, gunned her car, said she wanted to crash. And 28-year-old Rebecca Richmond, she died at the scene. Her 26-year-old brother also died at Harborview. Their father was horribly injured, 63 years old, broken leg, shattered kneecap, broken pelvis, 8 broken ribs, punctured lung. He's already had 2 surgeries. His prognosis is guarded. And I was thinking, this man in the hospital is dealing with these grievous injuries that are going to change his life forever, but he's also lost his 2 children. I mean, there's nothing worse. There's nothing worse.
And they were heading to go see the Fremont Trail. They were visiting from Los Angeles on a sidewalk, had just walked out of their hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, we often talk about the fragility of life and how no second is promised, really.
Yeah. It's just, and the young woman who was killed, she just got her law degree. The guy is, he was a terrifically talented singer and musician. And as their relatives described to me, they were just 2 incredibly precious souls. And again, I ask the question, does anybody think we're on the right path where we've legalized meth? Personal possession amounts of meth, where we have made this the lowest barrier place in the country to be a drug user. When we see this human toll, can anybody tell me that not locking up drug addicts, because locking them up is bad for the criminal, but we have to start looking at everything through the prism, through the matrix of what's best for society, not what is best for the addict or the criminal, but what's best for society. And when we have people driving up because they're so high on meth, and we've got a prosecutor who says, we're not going to prosecute meth or heroin, and we're on the wrong track. And I don't know why I'm the only person who's saying this, but look at our streets, look at the carnage, look at these families that are destroyed, destroyed. I mean, imagine being in the shoes of these people and then ask, are we on the right path when we prioritize what's best for the addicts and criminals, as we do around here? And to me, The answer has never been as obvious to any question as the one that I just asked. We are on the wrong track, and yet we continue at breakneck speed down this wrong track around here. And the toll is shameful. And then along the same lines, in Los Angeles, Reason.com has just released a study. Los Angeles is spending $1.2 billion on homelessness, and it is not working. The Skid Row in Los Angeles is one of the worst stretches in the world. I mean, we're talking Calcutta. There are people who are dying from staph infections because they are trying to help the people in Skid Row down there. And there is so much disease that
How long have we been talking about Skid Row, though? I mean, Skid Row, from the very beginning of the time I moved here to the U.S., I mean, that's just been...
Yes. Yeah.
And nothing has changed it.
No, we've dispersed it around the city here in Seattle quite a bit. When I was a kid, Pioneer Square was Skid Row. I mean, it's hard to imagine. That's what we knew it as. It's really hard to imagine because Pioneer Square has become so gentrified over the years. I mean, it's got some
issues still.
Yeah, it can be a scary place, especially at night, because there are people sleeping on all the benches now once again. But back before it was gentrified, and imagine this, before all the law offices and art galleries and all the things that turned it into a very upscale area, it was of Seattle's Skid Row. Mm. And it was just, you can't go there. You know, I was telling you last night, I'd go to the Greyhound bus depot at 2 in the morning to play pinball. But I knew you can't go down Pioneer Square because you might not come out alive. That was Skid Row. But in L.A., they're spending more than $1 billion on homelessness, and it is simply not working. Reason.com points out that more than 1,000 homeless people died on the streets in Los Angeles County last year alone, and they have promised 10,000 new housing units. But the cost of those housing units is between $500,000 and $700,000 per unit. Because when you get government involved and you get favored contractors involved and you get this homelessness industrial complex involved that is more about, yeah, let's get this homeless problem really cooking so we can all raise taxes and make money off of it. Here is Reason.com. They talked to Reverend Andy Bales, the CEO of the Skid Row Union Rescue Mission in Los Angeles.
Skid Row is what I call the worst man-made disaster in the United States. There's human waste on the sidewalks. There's all kinds of disease. I actually lost my right leg on the streets of Skid Row from getting a staph infection from coming in contact with human waste.
This guy lost his leg trying to tend to the homeless. Mm. And I will say again, God bless these people who make that their life's mission, because it has zero rewards other than...
I think people would argue that there are rewards if you can even make a difference in one person's life.
Yes, but they're few and far between as far as tangible. But your reward for a lot of these people of faith, as a reverend, is that you're doing the Lord's work. And that's in and of itself your reward. But this guy lost his leg because of the disease.
But what do you do? I just looked it up. So by the 1930s, Skid Row, which is like a 52-block area, already was home to as many as 10,000 homeless people.
Here?
No.
Oh, in L.A.?
In L.A.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a problem.
Mind-boggling.
Yes, and it's getting worse and worse. And again, the West Coast cities that have said, we're going to spend billions and we're going to provide free housing and we're going to decriminalize drugs, that's where all of the drug vagrants are flooding. Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles. San Diego, they're not playing these same games. San Diego's more conservative, and they have some problems, but nowhere near what they have in Los Angeles. And the difference is San Diego, big military community, more conservative area, and they've kept it in check. Same climate as Los Angeles. But San Diego's kept homelessness much better in check than have Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle. And politics is a huge part of that. Next up in the Fastest 15, I'm going to do kind of a complete segment on the latest in this impeachment nonsense. I'll do that at 1:30. But it is so obvious to me why this is happening, why this sham. I mean, they're not going to get 20 Republican senators to join the 47 Democrats so they can have a two-thirds Senate impeachment vote to get Trump out of office. So why are they doing this? And I'm looking at this lineup of Democrat presidential candidates. I still think Hillary's getting in. I listened to more of her Howard Stern interview, and she wants to be president more than anything on earth.
Mm.
And she is still devastated that she lost to Trump. But
well, I can understand how you'd feel.
If you got close, or
felt that you were robbed or whatever,
and
you know, whatever it is that she feels.
Yeah, she absolutely, you know, she still talks that she won. She pretends that the Electoral College isn't real. And anytime you're playing a game, you should know the rules. And not after the fact say, well, I'm going to still just believe in my set of rules. But anyway, so I'm looking at the candidates. So Michael Bloomberg is the new flavor of the day, the billionaire, former New York mayor. And I found an interview that he gave, because one of his big things is he's anti-gun. And he did a Q&A interview in Rolling Stone magazine a couple of years ago. And they asked him, what's it like to be the public face of stricter gun regulation? Do you get a lot of hate mail? And he answers a couple of lines. And then he said, it's like smoking. I've always defended your right to smoke. I think you're crazy, but I don't think we should take away your right. I do think we should take away your right to smoke where other people have to breathe your smoke. But if you go outside away from everybody else, I don't have a problem with that. And if you want to have a gun in your house, I think you're pretty stupid. So Bloomberg cannot be elected if he tells gun owners, which is a huge constituency in the swing states that are going to be contested. And he's got on record a quote, you know, it's kind of like when Hillary talked about the deplorables. And, you know, Bloomberg says, if you're a gun owner, you've got a gun in your house, you're pretty stupid. Well, I resent that. I have a safe. Mm-hmm. I am not stupid. I am a very sensible gun owner. I'm not a stupid person. And, you know, somebody who tells...
Right.
You know,
I mean, automatically, yeah.
He can't win. He just told 100 million Americans that now, they're stupid.
When did he do that, though?
2 years ago.
Okay. Five years ago in Rolling Stone magazine. Because he also changed his position on stop and frisk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the most effective thing he did as mayor, the thing that reduced crime more than anything else, and now he has completely reversed position on it. So anyway, Bloomberg's got no chance. Biden clearly has no chance.
And by the way, you know, I got hairy legs that turn blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight and then watch the hair come back up again. They'd look at it. So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
Okay, that guy's not going to get elected.
But you know the polls say differently.
The polls are so wrong.
Yeah.
No, look, there's one thing I'm certain of.
I'm just laughing. That soundbite is crazy. Was it mashed up? Is that like...
No, it was the same event. This part just surfaced. It was the same event where he was talking about...
I just don't trust that.
Was it Corn Pop or... What was that one he had a couple months ago? But anyway, I will bet anybody any amount that Biden's not going to be the nominee. Huh. And I know he's on top in the polls. Elizabeth Warren doesn't... She's not going to beat Trump. Because she's an economic radical. And so I'm looking at the lineup and I'm thinking, well, this is why they're doing this bogus impeachment. Because they know that they don't have anybody. There are going to be no people of color at the next debate. So you got, like Cory Booker today said that his Democrat Party is racist because they touted originally when they had Kamala Harris and Cory Booker had enough in the ratings to make the debate. And they said, we're the most diverse group of candidates ever. And now they got, they got one person of color, and that's Elizabeth Warren, of course.
Stop. You're just going to keep doing that little joke.
They don't have anybody
half,
who can
half the
can
country
win.
Disagrees with you on this whole impeachment thing being a hoax. So, I mean, well.
I'll go back to I was against the Clinton impeachment, and especially in this Me Too era. You tell me that the most powerful man in the world takes an intern under his desk, sodomizes her with an object. Her life's destroyed. Her last name is now synonymous with a sex act. And then that's not what got Clinton impeached. It was he lied under oath. He perjured himself. And I didn't think he should be impeached for that. And they're saying, oh, yeah, phone call. We're going to impeach this guy. It's insane. And anybody who thinks that Clinton should not have been impeached and Trump should is a hypocrite. And at least I'm consistent that I think using politics to overturn elections, whether it's Bill Clinton or Joe Biden, and what Clinton did was far more Donald Trump. What Clinton did is far more horrible. But I'm consistent. I don't think we should overturn elections. And plus, no Democrat or Republican senator is going to join the Democrats, and they need 20 of them. So it's just an exercise in futility. But I'll go into that in more depth in the next segment. Okay, one last thing here. You're about, where we got? Where's my guy, JT?
Oh, yeah. I read his apology.
Here we go. Let me park you. So Justin Timberlake, he's a married man.
Yes.
And he's
Jessica Biel.
He's record. Is that who he's married to?
Uh-huh.
Oh, she's cute.
Yeah. Wait. She's a great actress.
And she's cute. I don't watch movies. I cannot judge her acting ability. I've never seen a Jessica Biel movie, but
okay.
I've seen pictures of her.
No,
so I can comment on her cuteness.
She's very beautiful.
I can't comment on her acting ability. Anyway, he is doing a new movie. It's kind of a romantic movie with some other actress. And apparently, he had a little much to drink, and he was photographed holding her hand on the sidewalk. And Justin Timberlake just released an apology. And I appreciate this. He said, I stay away from gossip as much as I can, but for my family, I feel it is important to address recent rumors that are hurting the people I love. A few weeks ago, I displayed a strong lapse in judgment. Let me be clear. Nothing happened between me and my co-star. I drank way too much that night, and I regret my behavior. I should have known better. This is not the example I want to set for my son. I apologize to my amazing wife and family for putting them through such an embarrassing situation, and I am focused on being the best husband and father I can be. This was not that. I am incredibly proud to be working on the movie Palmer. Looking forward to continuing to make this movie and excited for people to see it. So that's his mea culpa for holding the
hands. Well, and that's an example of a good apology note.
That is, yeah.
You know, and it sounds like she was okay with it. People who were, she being Jessica, and people who were there at that night when the picture was taken say it was nothing.
Yeah, but still, you don't hold hands with somebody
Correct.
Who's not your wife. You just don't do that.
Yes.
Justin, take my advice. You just don't do that. Okay, that is your fastest 15.
This has been the fastest 15 minutes in the news. Fast. Dory's fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Okay, I'll go into the latest insanity in this whole impeachment thing. That and lots more straight ahead. Well, as promised, I need to talk about this entire scam that is impeachment. And as I said, the reason the Democrats are doing it is because they know that they don't have anybody in their roster of candidates who's going to beat Trump. And so their only hope is to impeach him, but they know that they're not going to impeach him. The House might send it to the Senate. You need two-thirds of the senators. And there's no way 20 Republican senators are going to vote to impeach the president. And that's what it would take, because there are 47 Democrats. You'd need 67 to get a two-thirds. And but it doesn't matter, because we found out this morning that Democrat Representative Al Green from the Houston area, he went on C-SPAN, and they know they have no chance at impeaching Trump. I mean, all of their words, actions, deeds, the Democrats know that they have no shot at this succeeding this time. But Representative Al Green said, oh, yeah, even if this doesn't work, we'll just impeach him again.
I would also say this for your viewers, for edification purposes. A president can be impeached more than once. So we can do this. We can move forward with what we have on the table currently. We can take this before the Senate, and we can still investigate other issues. And when the president has committed additional offenses, and my suspicion is that he will, we can take those before the Senate. There is no limit on the number of times the Senate can vote to convict or not a president. No limit to the number of times the House can vote to impeach or not a president.
They're just going to keep doing this for 11 months? What a bunch of pathetic losers. And so this morning, Nancy Pelosi, she made the announcement that they are moving ahead.
Our democracy is what is at stake. The president leaves us no choice but to act, because he is trying to corrupt once again.
Is it just me? Who's the actress she sounds like? Is that Betty Davis? Does Nancy Pelosi sound like Betty Davis more and more?
And the election for his own benefit. The president has engaged in abuse of power, undermining our national security and jeopardizing the integrity of our elections. His actions are in defiance of the vision of our founders and the oath of office that he takes to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Sadly, but with confidence and humility, with allegiance to our founders, and a heart full of love for America, today I am asking our chairman to proceed with articles of impeachment.
Sadly, she's so sad about this. And then, as she was leaving the podium, somebody called out to her. She was walking out of the room, several feet away from the microphones, and somebody called out to her and asked, "Do you hate President Trump?" And you heard a little bit of the clip, but let me give you a longer version, because Pelosi went storming back to the microphones, and with righteous, and I do mean righteous, carrying the shield of God, she was furious that anyone would suggest that she hated the president.
I think the president is a coward when it comes to helping our kids who are afraid of gun violence. I think he is cruel when he doesn't deal with helping our dreamers, of which we're very proud. I think he's in denial about the climate crisis. However, that's about the election. This is about the elect. Take it up in the elect. This is about the Constitution of the United States and the facts that lead to the president's violation of his oath of office. And as a Catholic, I resent your using the word hate in a sentence that addresses me. I don't hate anyone. I was raised in a way that is full, a heart full of love, and always prayed for the president. And I still pray for the president. I pray for the president all the time. So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
Okay. As a Catholic, she doesn't hate. Well, Catholics don't have sole ownership of that. Protestant Christians are taught to not hate. Jews are taught to not hate. I mean, anything except radical versions of religions, you're taught to not hate. And it's also interesting to hear Nancy Pelosi use her Catholicism when in the catechism, the church is absolutely anti-abortion. But maybe she hates the unborn children. That's the only people she hates. But no, don't give me your Catholicism, your convenient Catholicism, where you can't hate, but you can ignore other basic tenets of your church for political reasons. Please. And then there was this, the main witness yesterday, who didn't witness anything. She was a supposed constitutional scholar from Stanford University, Pamela Karlan. She, a few months ago, she talked about how much she hates the president. She even hates buildings that his name is on.
I came in from the airport yesterday and I got off the bus from Dulles down at L'Enfant Plaza and I walked up to the hotel. And as I was walking past what used to be the old post office building and is now the Trump Hotel, which I had to cross the street, of course.
Are you staying there?
God, no. Never. Never.
Oh, yeah. She can't walk by a building if his name is on it. And then a few years ago, she kind of gave a glimpse of the deep, dark recesses of her bizarre leftist mind.
We have to seize back the high ground on patriotism and on love of our country because we have more reason than they do to love America. The rich, pampered, prodigal, sanctimonious, incurious, white, straight sons of the powerful do pretty well everywhere in the world, and they always have.
Hey, rich, white, straight sons. Is there a problem with... spare me. You went to Yale and you're a professor at Stanford. You're quite rich. And apparently you have a problem with people if they're white and straight. I mean, as Tucker Carlson said last night, because he's the one who found that clip, he said, she needs mental help, but she's a prime witness. That's who they're pulling out for all this. So that's the latest in the impeachment sham. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Like one of the text messages I got, Pelosi is about as Catholic as the Shah of Iran. Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. One of the big local stories this week was on Monday. Man, it's hard to believe Monday was just 3 days ago because that was when Seahawks had Monday Night Football. They hadn't even played that game. I was just about to start our pregame show 72 hours ago, and that feels like a lifetime. But as I was driving down to the stadium to do my show, I did noon to 2 and then did pregame starting at 2. But Nicole texted me and says, Chris Peterson just resigned as Husky football coach. And so that has been a big topic of discussion. I'll talk to Pete Carroll about that when he's on with me tomorrow. The Pete Carroll show will be from 12:30 to 1 o'clock tomorrow during the Dory Monson show. But one of the reasons Chris Peterson stepped aside was it sounded like he just didn't want the constant 24/7, 365 pressure that is big-time college football. And not that he avoids pressure, but it sounds like he was afraid that he would have to compromise his value. That he didn't want to play the game going after those five-star recruits where a lot of times when their butts have been kissed from the times they were about, you know, 10, 11 years old, and it just corrupts. I mean, if you're a child and you have all these adults trying to get you to play in their program and come to our high school and all, it corrupts you. And as a result, you oftentimes, with these elite athletes, to deal with, you know, still kids, children, who have a distorted view of the world and of themselves, often if you want to play the game to get them to come to your school, you have to compromise your values. And that's what it sounds like was going on with Chris Peterson. But I have a story that illustrates just how insane the pressure of big-time college football is. So last weekend was the Alabama-Auburn game. Huge rivalry. And Auburn was up by 3 points. But Alabama had a chip shot 30-yard field goal that would have tied the score and sent the game into overtime. But
kick is on the way, and it hit the roof. The upright. It's no good. He hit the left upright.
So the Alabama kid, the kicker, he missed a field goal. So he's been getting death threats now because a kid missed a kick in a football game. And he's getting death threats from the rabid Alabama fans because Alabama tumbled from first to seventh in the polls. And Alabama's not going to be in the top four college football championship playoff for the first time in a long time. And their fans are livid because a kid missed a kick. Let me tell you about this kid who missed the kick. Joseph Bulavas, the Alabama kicker. He has, after getting so much hate from the fans, he has written an apology letter to the Alabama fans that he put out on Twitter. And here's what the kid wrote. After reflecting on the game, I just wanted to express my apologies to the entire Crimson Tide nation. Nobody was more disappointed than myself. Regardless of the circumstances, that is a kick I should make in my sleep, and nobody is as big a critic as I am of myself. To the fans, my coaches, and my teammates, I promise you will never see a guy work as hard as I will for the entirety of my career because I owe that to all of you. I refuse to let this be anything more than a bump in the road, and I'm confident I will come back better because of it. I wear my emotions on my sleeve, and this one was hard to take, to say the least. But I have confidence in this team and in myself, and that's what's motivating going forward. I have and will always give it everything I've got for this team, which is something that'll never change. God bless, and roll Tide. Can you imagine that? You know, he's living his dream. He gets recruited to go to Alabama, and then the situation kickers live for. You know, a kick that can tie or win a game, and he misses it, and he has to write an apology letter because he's gotten so many death threats. It's sad. It's really sad. All right, lots more. Big lead at two coming up next.